Lord Jellicoe real for?
Well, he sent his little boy running into Timbuktu. It's quite a long, 6 or 8 miles, I suppose. And as Berger was proposing to, just getting ready to move, suddenly he found that he was surrounded by, I think there must have been two or three companies from a German battalion. They tried to shoot their way out. Leerstieg was killed, a young chap, 16 or 17. He's commemorated now. There's a road named after him in Heraklion. One was wounded, and Berger then decided there was nothing else to do but to surrender. And they were rather lucky, as it turned out. Of course, this was just very shortly after the Hitler's commando, Befehl, and even people in uniform would be shot if they were commandos. We were, of course, in uniform. But he was not taken. He was taken then to Heraklion and interrogated. It was a perfectly reasonably conducted interrogation, I think, for about a week they had there. But they were in the barracks of the German Air Force there. The Gestapo were, luckily it was not the Gestapo. And they were eventually sent back to Germany. To prison camp. He ended up at with David Sterling at Colditz. But it was very sad though, because Georges Berger was marvelous. He'd had a tremendous record in the war. He's the first, I think, French officer to go back into France after the fall of France. He went back twice before going out to the Middle East, and he had brought this very select, high-class French unit which joined the SAS together. Jourdan, who took over command, was very good too, but Georges Berger was a great loss. It was very, any case, I was evacuated 2 nights later, I think. We joined up with the three other parties, which were SBS, I think they were, yes, who hadn't had, they weren't as lucky as we were. One aerodrome was found not to be at Timbuktu, was not, there were no German aeroplanes on it. One up by Malamé was so heavily defended they just couldn't get onto it. I can't remember what happened with the third one. Maybe there were in two. I forget. I had to brush that up. Any case, we were taken off by a little boat commanded by a marvelous man called John Campbell, RNR, RNVR or RNR, off the south coast. And what I remember most vividly about that was going out in the rubber boat. It must have been at midnight, and another little rubber boat was coming in. I couldn't see it, but somebody hailed me across the water saying, "I am Paddy Lee Fermor. Who are you?" And I said, "I'm George Jellicoe. Good luck to you." That's the first time I ever met Paddy Lee Fermor. I didn't meet him, the first time I'd ever heard him. And we've been very close friends for the last 50-odd years. It's a rather curious way to meet somebody for the first time. Any case, that's that. We were lucky. We got back to Merzimatru in this little boat, Porcupine, I think it was called. Can't quite remember. And she arrived one day before the Germans took Merzimatru. They were on their way up to the Alamein line. I'd been incredibly badly bitten. We'd spent 2 nights in a cave, and I'd never seen anything like it. My whole body was one, and I went into the 8th General Hospital in Alexandria for about a week, because I was running fevers and things. But that was.
These were mosquito bites?
No, they were much worse than mosquitoes. Things that ticks and. Things that get into sheep and things. No, it was very unpleasant indeed. But what was pleasant was that one of the two beautiful girls who had seen us training was a nurse, acting as a nurse at the 8th General Hospital. Elie Vassilopoulou, that was her name. My wife and I, we've met her since in Greece. Very nice person. Any case, after that, I rejoined the SAS, by then called, I think. And then I was asked by David to prepare for another series of raids, which we then carried out. And these were behind the German lines. We went out, I suppose, it must have been about a fortnight later, I suppose. We got a lot of jeeps. And three tunners and things, and we were helped by the LRDG, and we went out just to the south. I took this up, this convoy up to more or less to 8th Army headquarters, where David had been conferring with the Ork and people. And we went right out through the south of our Alamein lines, just north of the Katara Depression, and found a very good place northeast of Siwa, where we made our base, tucked into a range of things. And from there we carried out a whole series of raids on the Axis airfields along the coast. Paddy Main and David with their usual success. I wasn't much good. I was asked to go and ambush the road, and I went with some Free French. Absolutely not a damn thing came along the road that night on the Kess Road. And then as part of one of the other operations, I went with three jeeps and under my command two people who'd both have been MPs, Steve Hastings, and Carol Mather. We were to attack the most easterly of the German airfields, closest to the Alamein line. It meant going rather further than the other ones, so we had to start earlier. And Robin Gurdon, who was with the LRDG, he and was going to join the SAS, probably take over second in command from me, I think, but in any case, and he was attacking the next one. And both, because we had to start earlier, we couldn't use darkness as much as the others could. We were both caught by German or Italian fighter patrols. Robin Gurdon was killed. Couldn't have been more than 10 miles or so from us. And two of our jeeps were destroyed in the first attack. My jeep wasn't. And I managed to get into a wadi and camouflage it up before they came back. Although they saw us, and we were rather lucky with the machine gunning. We escaped from it. So that was that. And we had a long... So we had the whole party to bring back in this jeep, which had been shot through the radiator. It was leaking. We stuffed the radiator with plastic explosive to... and peed into it in times on the way back, and eventually got back thing. But so our raid was a total failure. I then went back with David to bring up some new things. We went back through the Katara Depression and came up again with reinforcements and things. And then he carried out one of the more spectacular raids, which is the raid, I think, on an aerodrome called Sidi Anish, which we did not in the normal, traditional SAS way of just a small party going in. But on that occasion, he took a force, I think, of about, it must have been about 17 jeeps, I think. And we approached it under cover of dark, and then formed up into two columns, and he in the center in the lead. And Paddy Main was leading one column, and I was leading the other. and we went, broke our way onto the aerodrome and went round it, just shooting up the German planes on it with our machine guns. There was a bit of a riposte. They got some anti-aircraft guns. One person of our party was killed. That was all actually on the airfield. And we got off it and did a lot of damage. I don't quite know how many planes were destroyed. I have seen a number. I think it was 30 or 35 or so. And we then lay up at during the daytime. Unfortunately, one of the French, we split up, so we weren't, came back in small groups, camouflaged, we couldn't get back the whole way. Unfortunately, one of the French groups, I think there were a couple of jeeps, were spotted by the Germans, and a very fine young officer called André Zernhelt was killed, and he written a marvelous poem, which has now been published and translated into English, he's a very religious person. It's a very beautiful poem, but he was a great loss too. We were luckier with ours, because I had a couple of jeeps. And as it happened, whilst we were lying up, a German Fiesler Storch came and landed by us. Not, I suppose, 800 yards from us, 600 yards from us. Two people got out of it, walk across the desert to do a pee. And we suddenly realized that we, with our jeeps, could get back to the plane before they could. So we captured them. Most extraordinary coincidence. One of the person was a German doctor, very good doctor. They'd coming back from headquarters. And as it turned out, in 1936, he came from Bremen. In 1936, I had had lunch with his parents when I was driving from Bremen with the son of the Crown Prince. I was staying at Sicilienhof at Potsdam at the time, and he'd taken me to lunch with his parents in Bremen. And they were very nice. But my days in the desert were rather drawing to an end then, because I'd been having a lot of trouble with a ligament, and it tended to lock. And I'd had it sort of de-locked two or three times in hospital, and then it went again on this particular series of raids. And by that time, it was completely locked and immovable. Malcolm Pladel, our doctor, looked at it, and he diagnosed it for one thing, the German doctor looked at it, and they were both right. There were two things wrong with it. The German doctor eventually escaped with his companion. I really rather pleased, wish them well. We went look for them, couldn't find them. I thought I'd seen them or saw movement behind some deserted, broken down lorries and things. And we went into it shooting with our Vickers case, and then a lot of people came running up with their arms, hands up. They were about 8 or 10 South Africans who'd been finding their way back from Tobruk. So we were rather pleased that we were able to bring them back. But we didn't find the two Germans.
What happened to the Fiesler Storch? Did you blow it up?
Fiesler Storch, I imagine we blew it up. Yeah. I can't really remember. And then we were evacuated. I went back with three Bombays. We managed to bring in to land, and some of us went back in that, and I went back in theirs, because of my leg. And I was out of it then. I missed their great Benghazi raid, which went wrong, and the Tobruk raid, which went wrong, because I was having my cartilage out. And in fact, after that was done, I was. They said it wouldn't be any good for 2 or 3 months. I went back in, I suppose, late November or November here to sort of talk to combined operations and lecture the troops and do
to London.
To London, yes. Where I first met Solly Zuckerman, and he was very interested in what he was advising Mountbatten at the time about our sort of living off the country. And I was asked whether I could help design some rubber boats for raids and things, which I was glad to do because we'd had to use German rubber boats. We didn't have any. And so we designed some rubber boats. I had some great experts put at my disposal. We designed, I thought, some jolly good rubber boats. I forgot all about them, and long after the need for these rubber boats had vanished in the Middle East, the docks and harbours of the Middle East were inundated with them. Somewhere called them Jellicoe Inflatable Intruder Mark I, which I thought was rather impertinent.
So which year would that have been when Zuckerman gave you that job?
This must have been 42, end of 42, stroke 43. I went back to the Middle East in early January. Travelling was rather curious then. I went to see Mountbatten before he was then command, you know, combined operations. And I said, I can't get on. I'd flown back in a... Yes, I'd flown back in a Liberator in the bottom of it, but there was nothing coming back. And so he wrote out, Captain Earl Jellicoe is badly needed, urgently needed, back for operational duties in the Middle East. Please give him any help you can. I went to the Foreign Office, that. They allowed me to take dispatches to Lisbon. I then got a plane from Lisbon to Gibraltar the same next day. I arrived in Gibraltar, I suppose, early middle afternoon. I then went on a pub crawl around Gibraltar. I ran into some German, American airmen who were taking out some flying fortresses. I showed them the letter. They said, "Would you like a lift?" They said, and I said, "Yes, I'd very much like a lift." And I was at Heliopolis early the next morning. It shows what you could do in wartime travel. You have the right sort of letter with you.
Did you, in effect, get back into operations?
What happened then? Oh, by that time, this was January 43, by that time, David Stirling had recruited, he'd expanded the SAS. It had become pretty large by then. And he had also enticed into it, they needed much enticing, a thing called the Ieros Lokos, the Greek Sacred Regiment, founded by a person whom I grew very, very fond of, called General Sagantis. He was then Colonel Sagantis, Christodoulos Sagantis, who has had a remarkable career, and that's another story. And I found that the first thing that I was wanted to do by David, who was then up Marith Line, all that sort of thing, was to bring the Greek Sacred Regiment, or detachment from them, a squadron from them, up to Tripoli, and then to start raids with them up there, which I did. And I drove up, I suppose we must have had 30 or 40 jeeps. We went up a road which is pretty familiar to me one way or another by then, to Tripoli. I spent most of the time with Sagantis himself and got to know him very well. And very soon after arriving in Tripoli, I received the news that David Stirling had been captured. And very shortly after that, the SAS was sort of partly broken up, had got rather large, a little bit unwieldy, and most of the SAS, two-thirds or so, then was formed into the SAS squadron, then became the first SAS regiment under Paddy Maine, and did marvellously well in Italy, and then went back to the UK for the overlord and post-overlord, and the remainder was then put under my command, called the SBS, Special Boat Squadron, absorbing some other people, attachment had been called the SBS, which was then under David Sutherland's command, and David became my squadron commander, one of my squadron commanders and second in command. There were two others. One was somebody called Stuart Macbeth, and Fitzroy MacLean was, for a brief time, as soon as he'd come back from what he'd been doing in Persia, he has also joined me as another squadron commander. And we had a winter camp, Lake of Tiberias, old Transjordan Frontier Force camp, and we had a summer training camp at Athlete, south of Haifa. That's where we did our training. But Fitzroy, I lost him very soon. He was then made a brigadier and sent off to command our mission with Tito. So I lost him, but I did gain one or two. I'd met, whilst I'd been back in England, I'd met a marvellous young Dane called Andy Lassen, and I persuaded Combined Operations Headquarters to second him to me. So Andy Lassen, this young Dane, who subsequently received a posthumous VC, in fact, he was the only person in the SAS, if you call the SBS the SAS, who did get, although David earned a VC, David Sterling, 10 or 15 times. I mean, he was most, I think by common consent, one of the most underdecorated officers in the British Army. But Andy Lassen joined me then. I had some marvelous people, John Verney. Now, Sir John Verney has written some very good books. He was at it. Walter Milner Barry as my adjutant. We had a very, very high-class set of people. David Sutherland did a series of raids in Crete that summer, again, pretty successful. Andy Lassen was on it, other people. I then went with a squadron, John Verney's squadron, over to Algiers, as we were asked to raid aerodromes in Sardinia. The main purpose of that was to a decoy. The attack was going to Sicily. The idea was to show great interest in Sardinia in order as bluff. And I must confess, these raids were not very successful. I was furious because I was not allowed to take part in them myself, because I did know the plan for the Sicilian operation, and it was felt too dangerous that I should be allowed to go in the raid in case I was captured, and the plans were forced out of me by one means or another. I appealed against that. I saw General Alexander personally, but he wouldn't change his mind. So I went with a submarine to pick up these parties of ours off the East Coast, and they never appeared. And what had happened, it was, I think, rather difficult. It was not like Crete, because Sardinia was, Italian population. Crete was just sheer luck. We chanced upon a Quisling. In Sardinia, it was much more difficult to move unobserved, and if you were observed, far more liable to be reported. But the real misfortune, we'd had a training camp at Philip Field along the coast, and It had been vetted and everything else, but it was malarial. And a lot of our people contracted malaria actually when they were on the passage by submarine to Sardinia. John Verney had a success. He blew up some aircraft. He's described it all in a very good book, so I won't go into that, but then was captured afterwards. So I can't say it was a brilliant success, these operations. Maybe we tried to ape what we'd been doing in Crete by mistake, but strategically it may have been a success. For all I know, it may have caused the Axis to think that an attack on Sardinia was imminent, as well as on Crete, on Sicily, or instead of on Sicily. I don't know. I went back shortly after to the Middle East to rejoin the SBS. I suppose, goodness knows when that was, August. You'd like me to go on?
Please, if we've got a bit more time.
Right. I was in early September. I'd gone up to Beirut to plan some operations with the submarine flotilla, who were going to raiding operations in the Greek islands. And I was sitting have dinner with one of my officers in the Saint George Hotel in Beirut, when suddenly a military policeman said, "Are you Major Lord Jellicoe?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "There's a message from your headquarters." We were then under called raiding forces, which had the LRDG, the Greek Sacred Regiment, and our SBS under their command, also have some Kalpaks I can't remember his name. He's a great writer on Arab affairs. How is that, by the way? Would I report back straight away as I was required for something? I reported back, drove down straight away to where we were, just near Acre, where the headquarters was. We were south of Haifa, of course. And was told that a plane had been sent up from Cairo for me, and I was asked to be on the aerodrome at first light with full operational gear, which I was. I flew down to Cairo, and I went into GHQ, and I went to a conference which had been going on. I think it must have been going on for about half an hour. And I listened with some amazement to hear what I was hearing. That was the Italian armistice was going to be that evening, and that the plan was to send a small group to Rhodes to try to persuade the Italian commander-in-chief, Admiral Campione, to come over on the Allied side, that if that was successful, he should be asked to hold the main airfields and the port of Rhodes